You are listening to the API the Docs podcast. We are here to talk about API documentation upstream and downstream.
So as a new writer, our newest writer has been the first one to try this out. And he was appreciative. He's like, look, I feel like I'm doing something. I can see that I'm doing something. I can see that things are moving forward. And that made him feel a lot less pressure about getting other things done and a lot better about what he was doing, because he could say, look, I am doing this because my bosses want me to do this. I'm not just doing this on the side. If you create a situation where you know you can mess up, you know people have your back, you know people can bail you out if you need it, you understand that things are additive, you have a way to track your own progress, that's a great way for people to feel they can be competent and confident in their job. It's like if they catch that this doesn't make sense or it doesn't work that way, rather than waiting for another, you know, hire to happen 6 months down the road and we have the same problem again, you know, make the fix now. Okay, please get this together. Okay. And I think people are shocked. The new hires were shocked. Like, I can just change this? Like, yes, you absolutely can. I've said this before in my previous talks, even saying that like our biggest problem with our API documentation is the fact that we spend so much time on the spec and making sure it's accurate that the actual heavier lifting of explaining how to apply it is kind of lost. So I don't consider it a substitution or a here's just taking care of everything, but I do consider it something that lets me cut down what I'm looking at. And I think that part's important. That's a big reason I'm a fan of these type of systems, is not because I think they solve everything, is I think they narrow the field of what I need to solve.
Welcome to our listeners and welcome to our guest, Anthony Sansone. This is the API the Docs podcast, and today your host is Laura Vosch, that's me. I'm one of the founders of Pronovix, which is a company that creates developer portals. And also, I'm moonlighting as discovering the field of API documentation, and therefore I happen to be the host of this podcast. And this podcast is the API the Docs podcast, which grew out from the API the Docs conference, of which Anthony Sansone, is a longstanding patron. And he has been also our guest in 2021, and he has also been presenting at the conference. So the interesting part, apart from what is specifically being said, is that we're picking up the story from before. So hi, Tony.
Hi, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And how are you back from the wilds?
Well, as Wyoming, I'm surprisingly injury-free, as well as infestation or bug-free, and my last COVID test passed. So I'm feeling great.
Cool. A little bit of an introduction who didn't meet you before. You are a technical writer extraordinaire with 20 plus years of experience, broad in developing and maturing people and processes in IT groups and departments. And you've been working both at startups and in large multinational companies. At present, you are working at MongoDB. So the last time we talked, you were saying you are a lead in one of the streams because you had, I asked you the numbers, you said 1,300 people, about 20, how many people? 21, 23? You said 23 technical writers at that point.
At that point. It's much mm-hmm. different now. We're closer mm-hmm. to 3,500 employees and upwards. I want to say we're going to hit 40 technical writers, including interns, by next month, I think. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. it's definitely a growing team.
And one of the topics we're going to talk about today is onboarding. So how do you go in a few years from 20 to 40 technical writers? That is something to be talked about.
Agreed. A lot of it comes down to knowing what a new writer needs to accomplish, having your head around all the pieces of the puzzle that your team needs, that the company requires, your HR, your legal, your finance, your IT people need to do to enable that writer, and what products and that they'll be documenting and the processes and systems that the team uses, you kind of understand all of that. The tricky part becomes understanding that total picture first. So when it came to me organizing onboarding, I couldn't just say, oh, here's what our documentation team needs, because that's not what the writer will be doing. They will be doing that. They'll be getting their PC set up. They will be setting up their information for travel, for different system IDs, for getting their pace checks managed and things like that. So when you understand the total picture, it becomes easier to kind of carve it out on a week by week basis. For example, when I first started doing this, we put more work in the first week that was team specific. And there was some pushback because they said, look, that's great. I want to get involved, but HR requires me to do this training, to sit in this meeting. IT needs this much of my time. So, hey, I'm feeling a bit too much pressure to try to do all that and this. And said, okay, we can adjust the schedule from there. In fact, I think we had done a survey of the last 14 people we onboarded last year just to say, okay, hey, where do things sit now? What did we do right? What did we do wrong? And that was one of the things that came out of it. They said, look, you got to give us a little breathing room at the beginning to do what the company requires. And we kind of sat back and said, well, that makes total sense. Same thing with the internal training the company requires for understanding the products and things like that. We didn't have a full understanding of how much work that was. So when I took it aside and said, oh, okay, they're requiring what came out to be the equivalent of 25 to 30 hours of online training. So you can't not give them that time. So we started blocking that part out. And then we would just basically made a rough template and said, here's a guide that you can use to start putting in what people need to start working on from start date. Now, how that's evolved is we turned it into a series of tickets in our ticket management system. So that way, if you're a new writer, you don't feel that you're not doing work. Because part of the problem is anybody who works in this type of field will always feel that they have to demonstrate or be able to show a degree of forward momentum. And the way they usually do that is, you know, you check your ticketing system, how much stuff have they done recently, things of that nature. So we took all of the pieces that they need to accomplish to get onboarded and made those into tickets in our ticketing system so that they could, one, track what they're doing, two, schedule it for themselves, and three, have that little endorphin rush of saying, yes, I did something. Yes, I did something. So as a new writer, our newest writer has been the first one to try this out. And he was appreciative. He's like, look, I feel like I'm doing something. I can see that I'm doing something. I can see that things are moving forward. And that made him feel a lot less pressure about getting other things done and a lot better about what he was doing. Cause he could say, look, I am doing this because my bosses want me to do this. I'm not just doing this on the side. So inserting that dropped a lot of the pressure off on that. Another big thing that we are still trying to figure out right now is one of the questions we asked that had probably the lowest positive response was, are they getting enough time with the various people they need to interact with? And that's still kind of a tough nut to crack, because example being, I can't just put them in front of a product manager just to say hi. Not very helpful. Product manager doesn't appreciate it. So how do we give new writers opportunities to interact with other teams and in all as many levels and range as we can without having it be just an exercise and a whole how you doing type thing for the person who's taking the call? Mm-hmm. And that, in terms of your onboarding, past your basic stuff, part of what we do in onboarding later is we start slipping in smaller pieces of work that the writer can work on. And if we're planning it correctly, we find things that are involving different teams. We find things that are involving potentially different internal stakeholders so that the excuse to meet with those people is ingrained You can't create these artificial constructs to get people to be familiar with your processes or your people or whatever. You need to actually have something they can work on that is actually of consequence. And when you do that, it's the same problem I have with learning something. I mean, if you've had this problem where you sit there and say, oh, I want to learn this language or this application or so on and so forth, but you have no reason for doing it other than learning the application, which isn't enough. So you have to kind of weave in the internal training, and you say the internal training, like the schedule they give, I tear apart and just say, okay, no, we're not going to do it in this order because, like, for example, learning about the product is great and all, but one of the things they have is how to learn how to use our ticketing system. And that's like one of the last things you learn. I'm like, nope, let's front load that. Let's make sure it's one of the first things you learn. So we go back and say,
one of the most tangible ones.
So. Exactly. Well, something you'll immediately use. Because again, learning things in the abstract is useless. You have to say, how do I apply this? And they will be using our ticketing system immediately, right? Like, we put their actual onboarding task list in that ticketing system. So if they don't know how to use it, they're almost immediately at a disadvantage. So they have a reason to know how, they have a reason to want to learn it, and they have the means to learn it. Boom, perfect. Then I give them smaller tickets. And why do I do that? I don't do it, though, just in the generic. I plan it out. I go, if you're learning this ticket, I give them a learning goal. It's like, you're doing this so you know how this piece of our documentation system works. And you're doing this ticket so you understand why you would use this particular command or run this particular command, so that everything has a tangible goal outside of just learning something. People feel like they're learning something as early as possible. They feel like they're doing something as early as possible. Mm-hmm. And that's been the trick, is that you have to combine all these different goals and kind of carve them up and weave them back together in a way where the person is learning something that builds towards something else, that is interacting with other systems and processes and people they interact with, and is something that they can track and feel good about accomplishing. Getting all that together, definitely tricky. And again, it requires you as the person who's putting together the onboarding to really understand what your team does, to really understand what the company requires, and understand how these things fit together. I purposely make time when I put together an onboarding plan. I put together time for the person to mess up. I almost plan for it, literally plan for it. I go, okay, they say, when's the first time somebody touches a big project on your team? I go, I hope within 4 weeks. And people look at me like I have four heads. I'm like, no, you do that knowing that they're going to mess it up. And that should be comforting to you. Why? Because you're ready for them to mess up. So you pick things that are difficult. You do things that are difficult right away, right? Or as early as possible. And then you tell them, look, I will guarantee you will goof this up. Don't feel bad. Totally fine. Totally cool. I want you to mess this up. I want you to run into problems. I want you to, because then you have a reason to troubleshoot it. You have a reason to ask questions. And we're not setting you up for failure. We're doing the exact opposite. We're setting you up to work through failure. And that's part of the thing, too, is that I think this is a big problem with onboarding, is that since it's treated a lot of times as something to the side of work, that you find yourself doing things as a new person that you have little confidence in, that you're scared of messing up, that you feel like you have no support for. If you create a situation where you know you can mess up, you know people have you back, you know people can bail you out if you need it, you understand that things are additive, you have a way to track your own progress, that's a great way for people to feel like to feel that they can be competent and confident in their job. there's nothing worse than being in a job where you feel like you don't have any idea what you're doing.
So this, the cadence of from zero to production that you describe, we're talking about weeks here, not months. And that is steep. And you were explaining before that this hangs on very, very extensive and deep and methodical planning. So that must be some redundancy in the planning. And this couldn't have come about from one person deciding that this is how it's going to be. How did this evolve and where did it start?
There's a couple of pieces. The first was when I started taking notes about what didn't make sense. And back then, when I started like 6.5 years ago, we weren't in as much of a growth mode as we are now. Like it wasn't hiring as many people. Mm-hmm. So I could start figuring things out and say what makes sense and what doesn't. Where it started taking off is when I had pushed for our team to have an intern. Now, MongoDB is well known for its internship program, and we get like, in the tens of thousands of applicants, we accept like maybe 80 to 100. And the technical writing team was getting none. And I'm like, why is this the case? Why have we not raised our hands and said, please give us somebody? So when we did that, I used that as an opportunity to say, okay, look, if I were to set up somebody's introduction to the team, to the company, right then and there, what would I do? And that's when I started talking to people who did this in other teams in the company. Because again, I don't know everything and I'll never say I do anymore. I talked to a buddy of mine who had interns and he worked in the company's C driver team. And he's like, well, here's what we do. We give them a list of tickets and we say, here's the ticket, here's what it covers, here's what you should learn. I said, well, that's actually pretty smart. So I went back and took that out and I said, okay, let's combine that with the stuff I was learning in terms of things you need to get set up to get your system running. And I'd done a Google Doc on that. And I said, let's put those two together. And then said, okay, how do we frame this? And they go, okay, we start framing it out by saying, okay, let's take it by a week by week type approach. Or, you know, for the first couple of weeks, it's day by day, then it becomes week by week, then it becomes month for month. And I framed that out. And then I went back and talked to my director about it. I go, what do you think? Does this make sense? And he's like, yeah, no, this can work. Let's try it out. And so our first intern was the one who got a chance to see how that worked. And we started making tweaks as we went. I've been very upfront with every new hire. When I directly handle their mentorship and bring them on board, that whatever they find that doesn't make sense, that they should absolutely bring up. And they should absolutely fix, right? It's like if they catch that this doesn't make sense or it doesn't work that way, rather than waiting for another, you know, hire to happen 6 months down the road and we have the same problem again, you know, make the fix now, okay? Please get this together, okay? And I think people are shocked. The new hires were shocked. Like, I can just change this? I'm like, yes, you absolutely can. We don't know everything. And how I was onboarded 4 years ago, it may not be entirely relevant to what you're doing now. So if you don't change it now, while you're thinking about it, while you're experiencing it, it's going to get the gap between what's written down and what actually happens will widen. So we kept adjusting that piece. Or, hey, we need to be hooked up to these systems to be able to try out certain pieces of our work. Well, that's not the case anymore. We replaced this system with that system, take that piece out, put the new one in, verify that it all works, boom, keep it moving. That's kind of how you built to getting things up faster. And again, a lot of it is showing respect for your new hire, where they're at, meaning like, obviously if it's a junior technical writer, you're going to give them a little more time, right? Your expectations are going to be a little lower. And you're going to spell out a few more things in more detail, which is fine. But a senior person, you're going to go back and say, hey, I presume you'll understand this, this, and this. So I'm not going to belabor this point, but you can ask me the question if you haven't, right? And that's how I started adjusting. That's 2019 through 2020. 2021 comes up. I start doing something I call office hours, which is literally I say, hey, On Wednesday morning, I will have an open time where you can ask me questions about any topic.
Having onboarded technical writers and having talked with your colleagues who are onboarding different roles, do you see a specific to technical writing difference in onboarding? Is there something special here? Should we be aware that some things need to be done differently, or should we accept that it's fine, we're the same?
No, I mean, okay. The thing is, every other area that I've dealt with, and I mean, to put things in perspective, I onboarded MongoDB's, two of MongoDB's VPs. I had a conversation with our CTO, and he let me onboard them too. And I learned how to onboard on a much higher level. But what I learned at this level is that, for example, if you're in a development team, the number of people you interact with may be smaller. Okay, mm-hmm. The number of systems you may interact with may be smaller. So it's easier. You're learning one tool, one product, or one subsystem, much smaller target audience. You may not necessarily need to be as comfortable talking to people as you are as a technical writer. You may need to be only familiar with one language, right? Like Java or Go or C. You're a technical writer, you need to be, I like to say it this way, and it sounds awful, mile wide, foot deep, or kilometer wide, meter deep, whichever you want to play it. But you need to know a lot of things, but not at a lot of depth. Okay. Like I have to be, as a technical writer, I have to be good at, I have a decent command of my native tongue. I need to be able to write. I need to be able to talk to other people. I need to be able to interview well, take good notes. I need to understand multiple technologies, multiple products, and I need to be able to context switch at the drop of a hat. That's very different. Okay.
All of these things that you just said, this would be kind of hiring level at this point, no?
Yeah. Well, I mean, in terms of who we hire, yes and no. I mean, I take the opposite view on hiring. I don't want to have them be somebody who has to know all these things. One thing I pushed for here was that we had an absolute kitchen sink of a job description. And I said, we don't actually need these people to know all this stuff. So why are you asking for it? Mm-hmm. All you're doing is creating stress in the person you're trying to hire. So for example, I said, for us, it's like you don't need to know programming languages, which is generic. You say you need to be able to read and understand Go, TypeScript, or Java. Okay. Well, that narrows down the field and makes it clear you don't need to write it, because having the creativity to write code is a much different thing than being able to read stuff that you see on a page. Totally different. That calms people down a bit. They go, oh yeah, I can do that. It's like, okay, good. The three biggest problems I would say in probably technical writing is managing ambiguity, meaning making things as clear as possible. Very hard to do. Knowing how to ask questions and knowing how to be kind of flexible on the fly. Those three things are difficult, and they're hard to interview for, but not impossible. So for example, ambiguity, I literally have like two questions I ask that seem insanely silly. People are like, why are you asking me this? I'm like, because I want to see if you grasp the underlying idea. I'll give this one away for free. What the hell? There's a infamous like language problem in English, which is, it's called the buffalo question, or the buffalo sentence. Okay, walk with me here. There's a sentence that is, let me see if I say this correctly. Buffalo, 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 buffalo. It's eight buffaloes in a row. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I ask the question, is that an actual sentence? Mm-hmm. And they sit there and ponder it for a second. The answer is yes, it is. But it's meant to demonstrate a concept called lexical ambiguity, meaning things are ambiguous by choice of word. And if they can get to that point of being able to tell me that, I'm like, perfect. You're not going to be caught up by not being able to say that these words make this one concept unclear. That's what I want them to get to. And if they understand that concept, great. I don't care if their writing's great necessarily by comparison. I want them to go back and say, I can take what I'm seeing in front of me, break it apart and make it as clear as possible because I know what words to pick.
Mm-hmm.
Great. That's a hard concept. That's like a really high level concept. Plus, a buddy of mine got me on this other idea that I tend to work on too, which is that I try to ask questions that have tiers in their answer, meaning that there are some questions you can ask when you're hiring that have an obvious answer, right? And let's call that answer like one, okay? Now, if you know a little bit more about the concept, you may say, well, it's this, unless these two things are true. Okay, great. Then that becomes like your one, your one's the wrong one. It's like answer squared, right? You're like, you've made it, you've understood a whole different level of complexity to it. And then maybe they say, well, it's the, and then somebody really knows what they're talking about, saying, well, actually, this doesn't apply most times. It only applies in these one or two particular instances. And you would rarely document this because it doesn't necessarily happen. That's the highest level answer, meaning you've broken through and you're like, you know this well enough to know this isn't even something you need to answer. Or you know that this is something that's much more far, this is much further down the pipe than most people understand. That's what I'm searching for. It's like, so again, it's like, you can answer the base question. I go, yes, you're right. That's the textbook answer, but it shows no understanding. Okay. The next person goes back and they show me something they have, has some understanding. The next person who really knows what they're doing shows me some insight and says, not only is it this, it's this for this reason. And you kind of just go shake your head and go, dang it, you're right. You totally understood this correctly. And I love people who give me answers that I wasn't expecting, but when they walk through their logic, I'm like, oh yeah, you were absolutely right on this. And I never dawned on me. That's great. And those are the people I really want to see us hire. And those are the people I want to hire. It's like, you've surprised me. And that's awesome. How do I get you to work with me more? You know, I mean, like one of my favorite people in MongoDB is like, I do not get to work with a lot, which is unfortunate. We're on different documentation teams, but every time I talk to her, she surprises me and does it in just absolutely brilliant ways. I'll say her name. Hell, Dakri Carey. She does work on our Realm team. And she just gets me to think about what I'm doing in different ways all the time. And you can't put a dollar value on that. You can't, and it's not something you can interview for. It's something you see, right? You talk to me like, oh, you're making a logical leap here that I hadn't even thought about, but you're absolutely right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes me happy. The same thing with one of our new leads we hired. I helped onboard them too. Ashley Brown, she had said, hey, you know, you're doing all this stuff with onboarding, but why aren't you making it tickets? My jaw just dropped and I was like, yeah, why didn't I? And I didn't get mad. I didn't be like, well, no, that's not how we do things here. I said, no, you're absolutely right. That makes so much more sense. And those are the people you want to hire, is people that make you think, right? And yeah, I mean, there's so many people that we brought on in the last like year and a half, 2 years that have done that. And I love that part of my job where they teach me something. And part of what, I don't know if you've had this experience, but what worries me and why I think that some degree of like the work I do with you folks is that I like doing that because otherwise the only place I would get new ideas is new hires, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that means your new hires have to be pretty darn cool because you need them to give you that boost, or you need to be in a place where you meet other people of like experience and like understanding. So, you know, like there's a number of people that I've met going to your conferences where I'm just like, this person got me to think in an entirely different way. And I hope that we do that when we hire, and I hope that we keep doing it next. Like, it's like my next plan here was to get a bit into professional development, say, what does professional development mean for a technical writer and so on and so forth. And a lot of it, people automatically go to a language or a programming thing or writing. And I'm going, no, part of it is how you think.
Yeah. And thinking patterns to create the library of thinking patterns.
Exactly. It's like, how do I attack this problem? How am I going to do this differently? And, you know, a lot of it is shedding assumptions. Like I think that, and any of my developer friends may disagree with me on this, but I think the chance to make a real aha breakthrough in terms of what you're doing on a day-to-day basis is higher as a technical writer. if you are capable of truly interrogating what you're doing and saying, no, there actually is a better way to approach this. Like meaning like good code is good code. Okay. You can whittle down some of it to make it a little more clear or a little more concise, whatever, but you can't necessarily do what a technical writer does, which is break it entirely in, you know, you can shatter it and rebuild it in any way you want and then make it sing, where it's like, this is so much more clear. This is so much more understandable. And I threw out everything that was already there. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, you can do that in coding, don't get me wrong, but like that's a refactoring. And in their case, that's a lot of extra work with a lot of extra dependencies, as opposed to me taking one paragraph and destroying it and rebuilding it in a way that makes so much more sense. That is a thrill and a point of attack that you don't necessarily get in other areas.
I think it's hard to teach, though. I have a hard time being sure that when I say, please leave your ego outside the door, that I'm not serving mine, but that it's really important. I get reassured in conversations like this with you that it's really important, mm-hmm. but there's a strong pushback on that. In our previous conversation, you mentioned that one of the things that is keeping you busy is thinking about cognitive load, and more specifically to in documentation, mm-hmm. to shoot for a level of detail that makes it really hard not to understand. And I was quoting you. Mm-hmm. Where did you get with this, and what kind of levels of details did you find? The reason why I'm asking it, partially because it's interesting, but partially mm-hmm. because in a previous conversation, this came up that, so for example, in mapping, when you look at a map, it has this mm-hmm. boilerplate that says resolution. And you learn right. to look at the resolution and you know what you're seeing, right? Like that right. kind of like this shared understanding of a resolution. What does that mean for the map? And I think the word resolution has yet to come up for API documentation, or there is no universally yeah. shared way of boilerplating. What kind of detail are you going to get here? Did you come up with something for that?
Well, that's a great question, actually, because that's the thing we've run into, is saying, okay, what qualifies as enough or sufficient information? And that kind of goes back to what we said before, what I was talking about before, about the idea of having opinionated documentation, meaning you don't kitchen sink it, okay? Mm-hmm. And I find that to be a problem, stuff I've written. I find stuff I run into in editing where it's like, you've given people every choice. Okay. But if you give them every choice, you've given them none. Okay. Sometimes it's just smarter to say, here's how you should do something. Yes, there's six different ways you can get to this end. Tell them the one that actually matters. Okay. Like I said, I've said this before in my previous talks, even saying that like our biggest problem with our API documentation is the fact that we spend so much time on the spec and making sure it's accurate, that the actual heavier lifting of explaining how to apply it is kind of lost.
So one way for that would be a worked example, but that's already a lot. Is there a middle ground?
What to do with like a more full tutorial or there is. I mean, like part of it is that's the reason I'm more of a fan of things like OpenAPI than say some of my cohort might be, not in MongoDB, but other people, is that it gives you the ability to string together coding examples and things like that easier. Because that's the biggest problem, is the fact that if I have to spend, it reduces cognitive load. Anything I can automate reduces cognitive load, okay? So if I can make it a switch I toggle and then boom, it generates out like most of my SDK or most of my testing framework, well, thank you, then it's something I don't need to think about. But because that, like the how is handled, the what is handled, the why, it leaves me room to explore the why. It leaves me room to explore the where. It gives me room to explore the what or how much. So I don't consider it a substitution or a here's this taking care of everything, but I do consider it something that lets me cut down what I'm looking at. And I think that part's important. Like that's a big reason I'm a fan of these type of systems, is not because I think they solve everything, is I think they narrow the field of what I need to solve.
Mm-hmm.
And like I'm thinking of one of my contemporaries in Chicago, and I'm not gonna pull them out here, but they're not a fan of the of things like OpenAPI. And I said, why? It's like, because it doesn't do everything. It's like, no, it doesn't. But that's the point. I don't need it to do everything. I need it to do some of it.
We started referring to these as enabling constraints. So it gives you the playing field where, you know, the rules, and then you can play.
Mm. Oh, absolutely. And again, like I said, it's I'm not a fan of people who try to figure out every single possible exception to something right away. You know, I define this as worry about the rule, not the exception. And so many people is like try to find every exception. And it's like, no, stop doing that. Don't try to find every exception. Put the rules down. Put the rules down well. And then the exceptions will come, but let them come later. Don't try to sit there and say, well, if this happens, then you need to account for this too. That's great. How often does that happen? And they stutter. I'm like, then don't worry about it right now. Put that out of your head. Let's get the main thing done. If you end up spinning and wasting cycles on something that could happen or might happen or could happen if these 10 things are triggered, you're not getting the big stuff done, right? And we're limited time, limited resource. Everybody is not, you know, whether you're MongoDB, Facebook, Amazon, Google, doesn't matter. You're all resource constrained in some way. Just mm-hmm. the number of resources may be variable. But because of that, you can't limit yourself. You can't say, well, I'm not going to solve this because it doesn't solve 100%. Nothing solves 100%. Absolutely nothing solves 100%. Does it solve 60? That's a win. Does it solve 20? That's a win, right?
But and then
exactly.
If somebody, if a user figures out that they are not in that, say, 80,
mm-hmm.
then the next level is to leave a door towards support or whatever.
Well, exactly. Well, I mean, yeah, there's that. There's also the case of, you know, hey, let me know what we missed and we'll go back and tweak it.
Thank you very much, Tony, for coming. And
no problem,
for the updates and your insights into onboarding, which is, I think, tremendously valuable. And it's the new trouble in 2022. So thank you very much. It was a pleasure talking with you.
As always.
And see you at the next API Dedux conference.
Sounds good. Thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the API the Docs podcast. Thanks again to our guest, to Pronovix, for letting us work on this, and the entire API the Docs community for all of the mutual support and sharing of experiences that you give each other. Do you have a topic or guest you would like us to spotlight? Drop a note at podcast@pronovix.com. If you go to the website apithedocs.org, you can find the recaps and recordings of past API the Docs conferences, as well as the upcoming program. Until next time, be well.